If you want to listen to this episode or any of our episodes ad-free, you can do that now. Head on over to Patreon. Click on the ad-free level. You get all of our bonus shows that you've been hearing so much about. Plus, every single day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, you can listen to this episode or any of our other episodes at the same time, ad-free, over on Patreon. Welcome back, everyone, to our chat, our epic chat with Miss Carol Raswell. If you haven't heard part one of this chat, why don't you check it out first? We talk about how Carol first got involved with Housewives, how she was cast, what she expected. Did she know what she was getting into? Her beginnings on Housewives, who she got along with, who she didn't get along with. It really just set the scene for this epic chat. And really, Carol's early days for her six-year run. 6 years, guys, that's longer than most. So we get into it. We ended the last part with asking Carol a question of who she would rather be stuck on a deserted island with, Luann, Bethany, or Aviva. This was Carol's reaction. Stay tuned. Hope you guys enjoy the second part of our epic chat with the one and only Miss Carol Raswell. Before we get there, I have one question. You've had your share of ups and downs. You know, we talked about Aviva. We talked about if you and Luann, if you had to film with one of these three people, like just say you were going to go back and you had to go on a vacation, just one film or go on a vacation with one of these people, Aviva, Luann, or Bethany, which of these three?
Oh my God. That is a terrible question. I mean, like to be filmed or just to go on vacation?
One-on-one vacation, like on an island, just the two of you. Oh, Bethany, Luann, or Aviva.
I mean, it's almost impossible to say. I mean, I guess that's literally impossible. Like I'm visualizing that. And I can't extrapolate the experiences I've had with each of them, you know.
I'm giving you like flashback nightmares. Like I'm giving you PTSD.
I do have PTSD. I think everyone who leaves the show goes through at least a year or two of PTSD. That's a real thing. Bravo should really pay for the therapy of the jettisoned housewives. I don't know. I'm going to plead the fifth.
I never said they were all going to be easy questions, right?
I mean, other than maybe Aviva, because it's been almost 10 years. I don't know anything that's going on in her life or what, you know, and I think more than most of them, she was really playing a role. She was so crazy, you know, with throwing the leg and then never not being able to travel without her. Like everything was like so hyped up. I think a lot of that was for show, right? You know, and I think Heather has said she's come to understand the anger that I had towards her for what she said about what remains. And but now, of course, this is going to be some stupid headline. Okay, so it's going to be some headline that if I had to be on a deserted island with anyone, it would be Aviva Drescher. So I'm going to call it out as a headline right now.
I think the headline will be Carol Raswell wants to be friends with Aviva again or something like that.
Or Carol shades Bethany and Luann. I don't know. You know, it's just cannon fodder, we used to say at ABC, cannon fodder, just, you know.
Well, your friend Heather is friends with Aviva, so she can make that happen.
I know. I think she's because she, it's in my ear that she recently said, I think she did a podcast with her.
She did one with Aviva, but she also mentioned it here. Somehow it came up and she's like, yeah, one day. It's not like an active plan, but she's like, one day.
Oh, really?
I mean, I don't know if she's going to make it happen. I just think.
Well, I will say when Heather did decide to go back on the show, which I implored her not to do. I mean, I said, you know, okay, if you're gonna go back, I think what a fun scene to do on that show, because I knew the other women, that they were the two new ones and then the three veterans. And like, that does not make a show. I'm not a reality show producer, nor do I watch much of it, but I have that instinct, and that's definitely not a show. So that's why they needed Heather to be a sixth person. But also I thought it'd be a great scene. I said, you've got to have lunch with Aviva, bring Aviva back on. And I just pictured the scene like of her just showing her legs walking in those same, in the Christian Louboutin sandal that she threw, that was attached to the leg that she threw at Cirque. And I said, what a great scene. I just thought the audience would love that. Like, you see Heather, you cut to Heather sitting, waiting at lunch table. And then the door opens and all you see are the legs with those shoes on. If she still had those shoes, I said, that would be epic. You got to do that. And she was going to do that. I don't know if she, but of course it devolved into some grotesque vaudeville show that first weekend. So she was like, I'm not going back.
Maybe you should be a reality TV producer. Do you see how I'm sitting here? Like with my mouth, like, I'm like, this is like, I can picture it. Yeah, and if she doesn't have those shoes, I'm sure if she said Bravo would have gone and found them somewhere, she would have.
Yeah.
Found them.
Yeah. I mean, how epic would that be? That would be so good.
I would have gone and saying you, so you really told, because Heather said she called you. You were like, do not do this. Do not go
she
back.
She called me and said she was thinking about it. And I said, what do you, and she said, well, you know, I'm just going to sign some appearance contract. I said, send me the contract. And she sent it. It was like 3 pages. It was basically a 5-year contract. It was literally like, it was crazy. And I was like, first of all, you're not signing this. And second of all, I really don't think you should do it. It's not the show you remember it to be. It's just, you know, the cast is whack. It doesn't make sense. The new girl, you know, she had met Leah, I think, once before, but didn't know her at all. But she was just not someone. I knew Heather, and I was like, you were just not going to be down with her. And I didn't know the new girl, Ebony. But, you know, I just thought it was just going to be a bad, it was just going to be difficult for Heather, because she comes in with a little bit of a lightness, which I think, credit to Bravo, they realized they needed, you know, something light, someone who's just going to be a little lighter. And she didn't come across that way at all. They really used her to create this crazy drama, none of which made sense at all. Right. And they used her as, I'll use my expression, cannon fodder, because all the other women had signed contracts, right? So she didn't sign a contract. And there's always this thing on the show where the person who's on the show that doesn't have a contract, like, you don't align yourself with her because she might not even be around. So you're not going to take a stand. Like Ebony in the episode I saw was not going to take a stand against Leah in support of Heather, right? When right. Heather, you know, I felt like it could have gone that way because Ebony at one point was explaining, like, Heather said something about voting. Now that's a topic I knew a lot about, because I had a drama about voting, about not voting. And sure, you don't vote because the system's working for you. Great. Good for you. Well, what about the system's not working for millions of people? So
yeah,
but it's a hard conversation to have. And then that conversation turned into this crazy thing with Leah calling her a Karen or something, which actually is not the definition and made no sense. And it was more about, shall I say, virtue signaling than anything else, because it made no sense that she would be called a Karen for saying like she should vote, right?
Right.
Not what the meaning of that is. It's completely distorted. And I thought that was a moment where Ebony could stand up and say, hey, wait a minute, but you're not going to every fight really was about the fight and also about the show. The fights were about the show. So you weren't going to align yourself with some chick that just here for the weekend, because, you know, you're going to
right.
pick battles, and you're just going to let her twist in the wind, because she might not be here. The other four are going to be here, and they're going to do confessional interviews, and they're going to be in the open with the apple, you know.
And especially when Leah at that point was like the darling, like after the first season, Leah was like the best thing that ever happened. So yeah, like Ebony didn't know any better, even though now, I mean, Leah's
I don't know what happened to them now, but I mean, Ebony's you know, she's very intelligent from what I saw in the, and very willing to go to the mat on subjects that, that I tried to a little bit in my, in the way that I could, but she was fierce and kind of like that, but it was, she's just like, that was, this is a totally wrong show.
Like, I've had her on here twice and I've loved her both times personally, like just one-on-one. I've had a great time with her.
I know. Like, I only saw what was on the show, but I just thought, wow, I'm like, she's willing to go there. And I think that's great. And, but she, it just felt like she was completely miscast in that. She would be great on The View and some of those, like, you know, political adjacent shows. I think she'd be fantastic. She's a smart woman. She's making her own decisions and she probably has a game plan, but she's right. It is production. You know, at the end of the day, it is production. I know no one likes to say production, but they decide what goes in the show and what goes out of the show. They decide what, you know, the subjects that are going to come up that they're going to fuel. And then the subjects that come up that they're going to damper, you know, it is production. And that if they're recasting the whole show, they should get rid of the production company and get a production. I said that so many years. Oh, I'm going to get hate mail now, but I just felt like, A, it's a production company that's based in Burbank. They really don't have a good vibe about what New York is about. And so just get a production company that is based in New York, that really knows New York, that really knows what we do here, what the dynamic is, because it's really subtle. You know, it's like you can't over the essence of what New York is hard to pinpoint. Whereas like in Beverly Hills, it's easier, you know, famous people, right? It's like, they're all actresses at this point or models or whatever. You know, but New York is subtle and it's such a delicate dynamic that they really need to understand it. And I think Bravo would be better served if they had a different production company.
You think that's
so many times why I'm not on the show.
No one wanted to hear you and no one wanted to hear from you.
Well, no, I just felt like the season I left in season 10, it was really difficult to work with production because I could see then very clear, like two reasons. I wasn't willing to make myself smaller anymore. And I also could clearly see what was going on in terms of the manipulation of the storylines and the fact that like, you know, they were completely ill-prepared at what happened in Colombia with the boat trip. And like, I was like, who? And then you just sort of quiet, like, wait a minute, who is running this? And what, this is not okay. And I, you know, I had some experience with producing, you know, news,
yeah.
But 10 years of producing for Peter Jennings and Diane Sawyer and all of them. And you had to be on your game. But like you came every day with your A game, right? Your A game. And here it is. It's like, wait, what the fuck is happening? And it's not only not on their A game, they're not even in the game. And I just thought, and I could just see that whole season and as it played out on the show, that it was just, they were getting away from what really made the show good, you know. And that was, I really think, the naturalness, right? They were just manufacturing these storylines that just didn't make sense. And you know, I always said when the audience is really smart, and I must say the fans of the show are kind of amazing, and I've only had good interaction. I mean, there are haters and stuff, and I get some hate on social media, but when I interact with them in person, they're just fantastic. And they have an institutional memory of every season, every episode, every storyline. It's quite spectacular, their breadth of knowledge about the show. So when they're confused, you know, it's because there's something not working, because it's not a real story. It's manufactured in a way that they're trying to put like a square, you know, peg into a round hole, and it just doesn't work. And I saw that they were doing that in season 10, and they continued to do it. And Dorinda went up against it when in the season that she was in. And yeah, so listen, I'm not saying that, like, I'm not a producer on, and you know, I'm sure Bravo is happy with the production company, but you know, they make choices, you know, like, you know, and they've said things about me on the show that weren't particularly flattering. So I'm not going to sit here and say they're amazing, because I don't think they are. I mean, for instance, keeping that scene in with Heather at when she was talking to them and they were accusing her of Leia was reading some nonsense on some fake blog thing about what apparently was said in the press, which was her podcast. And then Luann, like out of the blue, she was like, called me a bitch. Right? That happened. Okay.
Yeah.
She called me a bitch. But
well, she said rats a well, I think, or something. Ratsy or something like that.
She said, Heather, who were you talking to with on your podcast? And Heather said, I was talking to Carol.
Yeah.
And she said, she's such a bitch. Okay. So that happened, right? So a lot of things happened in that dinner that the audience will never hear about or see, right? But Bravo chose to put that in, calling me a bitch. I haven't been on the show for 3 seasons. They had, and then they have her confessional where they say, she says, oh, every I think of Carol, I swipe right or left. And then she's like, Ratsville, right? She called me Carol Ratsville. That line was given to her, right? By a producer, I think a showrunner, I'm pretty sure which one it was. It was given to her to say, you should say this. So she delivers this line, which she did not make up. She does not have a sense of humor. She was given the line and she repeated it. So in that way, it's like, okay, Bravo. You know, touche. Okay. I've been slagging you a little bit on various podcasts or on social media. And that was but I'm saying it's like, you're a corporation, you're a $1 billion company. And I'm just a single girl with bills, right? I'm just here. I was on your show. I produced 6 years of content for your show. And that's what you're going to do. You're going to call me a bitch and then give one of the characters a line making fun of my married name. I'm like, I bought a mug. Welcome to Ratsville. You know, like I'm going to lean into it. I don't care really, but those are the decisions that Bravo is making. Now, season 11, my first season off the show, my name came up a lot because I was in a group. It was never on the show. Ramona and Dorinda would call me and like, your name came up. And every time my name would come up in a scene, the producers would scurry out and say, stop talking about Carol. Don't talk about her. They weren't calling me a bitch and they weren't making fun of my name. And it was never in the show. It was literally like that season. Remember Dennis had passed away. Dennis was talked about more on the show than I was talked about. And I passed away. I was still alive and here and involved in some friendships with some of the women, but Bravo never spoke about me. My name never came up in the show. It was like, it was a mandate passed down. Do not speak about Carol. Yet here we are 3 seasons later and they have an opportunity to call me a bitch and they take it. So it's like, okay, Bravo, touche.
Touche, but right. They're a corporation. You are.
Right. Exactly. So when I say that they're steeped in misogynistic, sexist narratives and stuff, I say that, you know, not just out of pettiness. I just say that because that's how I feel. That's what I saw. That's what I see on the show. And that's what they prove, you know, by doing that. There's no reason my name had to come up in that scene at all.
Right. And Heather brought that up when she was here too. She's like,
oh, she did.
She's like, well, I don't know how it came up, but I asked her something and she was like, let me make this clear. And she brought it up. She's like, this is not okay. And like, Carol's not part of the show. Like I went back, not her. So why are we?
But you know what?
See, your friend is sticking up for you on this podcast.
Well, I'm sure she said something at the time that was cut out, you know, I mean, you know, so maybe Heather could say, who knows what happened? All I know is there's hundreds, thousands of decisions gone into every single hour of that show because we film 100 hours a week and they cut it to 43 minutes. There's a lot of decisions being made about what stays in and what goes out. And the fact that they hand her this line to say, and it's just silly. And I don't hold it against her at all. Like, you know, I've called Luann, you know, I've taken Luann to task in social media and she was getting back at me a little. But the fact is, Bravo is making a decision to keep that in, whereas the other times my name would come up, it was like, oh yeah, we don't want
to. Interesting.
Carol's dead to us.
Right, that first season after you were gone. Well, speaking of your exit, just since you're right here, you know, you talk about things, you're a journalist, Carolyn. Carol, I may be a princess, but I'm definitely not a drama queen. I love that. Well, I just have my behind the velvet rope, but now I want a mug that says, welcome to Ratsville.
No, someone like literally the next day, maybe Betches, like that feed, Instagram, came out with a mug. It says, "Welcome to Rasta."
You should just, you should make t-shirts. You should lean into it and get a piece of the action yourself. I mean,
yeah, if I was a true capitalist, I would be doing that, but that's just not my speed.
This is where my sick mind goes.
They did send me. I mean, I DM'd them and said, "Oh my God, that is hilarious. I'd love to order one." And they were like, "Oh, we'll send you one." So I was like, okay. So they sent me one. Thanks, Bravo.
I love that. Well, I was going to ask you because you're here. So I want to hear it from you directly because so many things are said about so many different things. The one thing with you that is said over and over and over is two things. One, that A, you were let go because you at the reunion said to Andy, "You're so full of shit, Andy."
I said so much more than that to Andy, but they didn't.
I'm just telling you that. That's one thing that comes up all the time.
Maybe.
And then the other is that Bethany walked in and said, "It's her or me."
I mean, knowing the two of them, right? I would say it's probably more the latter and not the former. I feel like if there was an ultimatum made, it wasn't from Andy. Because Andy's in charge. Andy doesn't have to put that in where I called him and full of shit, fuck off. I don't know. I said a lot of things. I mean, I don't know. They didn't put all of it in, but he was full of shit. I just called it like he was totally full of shit. He was defending indefensible behavior. It was clear not only to me, but to the rest of the women on the couch. And, you know, I thought the reunion was the time where you can like tell the truth, break the fourth wall, how they do now actually in the season, right? They all do it in the season. And it wasn't that way. I couldn't, I did as much as I could, but there was definitely this feeling like Andy was protecting Bethany. And I get it, you know, again, it's a brand and she's the star of the show. And I understood that. And they were gonna circle the wagon. So even though Bravo never said that to me, obviously they wouldn't, but I always, you know, probably felt like, oh, okay, I got it. If you have to pick one, it's definitely not going to be me. But listen, that reunion was gaslighting. Like you can't imagine, like I have been gaslit. Obviously you're on a reality show where women are saying things that like you said, and you're like, I didn't say that, or that never happened. You do. That happened every episode through all the years. But the gaslighting, the concentration of gaslighting that went that was focused directly on me at that reunion was so intense. And, you know, I remember even after the reunion, I said, you know, it's funny because I always held them to the same standard as like 2020 or 60 Minutes. I'm like, these are the facts. And they're like, we don't care about the facts, Carol. Like, okay. But I would send like emails saying with bullet points, like, this is what I said. This is what she said. This is what happened. Then what do they call it? Receipts. Like I had receipts, but I would send them to production. I had some receipts at the reunion. I had all the receipts at the reunion. They sort of let me say some of them, but not all of them. You know, and it made for good television, I guess, you know, made for good television, but I remember after the reunion, I fired off like three emails to not everyone at Bravo. I mean, I left Frances Berwick out of it. She's top of the top, but everyone below Frances Berwick, who now is the
including Andy Kong.
Yeah, to Andy and everyone at production and the executives in charge of Bravo, with, you know, video clips of the show, what was said, what wasn't said, you know, all this stuff. But I feel like I knew that it was done. I would have done it again if we could come to some kind of arrangement just for the money. I probably would have, and I would have hated myself for it because again, it wasn't aligning with who I was as a person. I'm going to be honest. I likely would have done it another season. We were getting paid a lot of money at that time and just, you know, kind of mailed it in. I think they knew that. I was having a lot of arguments with production, with the executives at Bravo. I mean, it was really rough. And I remember in the season during when we were filming, all the producers were like, "This is your best season. It's so good. Oh my God, you're really getting in there." And like, I was like, when the producers are telling you it's really great, it's not going to be good for you in your life. You know, I think it was time for me to go. I probably, had they not made that decision, whether it was an ultimatum or not, and again, this is conjecture because I don't know, but I can suspect based on experience. I might have done another season. It wouldn't have been great. I was starting to feel crazy. I'll be honest. I didn't go into the show crazy. I'm a very level-headed person. I'm voice of reason. I'm a very reasonable person. I'm again, by training and nature, a journalist. So I'm very rooted in facts and logic and all that stuff that just doesn't work when you're on a show like that. And it was playing with my head, you know. I was starting to feel crazy. And I'm sure I did some crazy things. And I'd be like, I'm starting to become like more like them. When I knew going in season 5, I was like, I'm so not like them.
Interesting. Well, and one couldn't blame you for going back after, because it would have been your 7th season and it would have been money, a lot of money, like you said.
Everyone, that's what they're doing it for. It's a job, it's a contract. It's like you're producing content. And it's another way for me as a storyteller, whether it's journalism or writing or publishing articles. And it's a way of telling stories that I found kind of interesting for a while. And then, you know, you realize you have no agency on that show.
Do you think, like, because you think knowing the person, you said, like, it's possible Bethany went in and gave this ultimatum. Do you think, like, you would have been let go anyway? Or do you think that really had anything to do with it?
I think our friendship, dissolving our friendship at that point would have, what was the reason. I think it had everything to do with that. They didn't like the way I didn't fight in a housewifey kind of way. Like I didn't cry or get my feelings hurt, or like, I was just like, fact. Well, let's see what you really said. Let's, you know, and I know, you know, and then like my blogs were like excruciating. I mean, they just like killed, you know, everything I wrote was like rooted in facts and rationale and stuff. And it was hard to, I can't fight. I wasn't fighting like a housewife. You know, I wasn't going to get drunk and cry about this, you know, losing a friendship that I, at that point I realized was just like for her, you know, maybe just for the show.
Well, and you're a journalist.
To give her a break. I think she probably going into that season knew that she was going to have some beef with me because it made sense. The two best friends, then 2 years later, 3 years later, they have, you know, a fight. Andy once said to me early on when we were filming, like that she had said something like that. She really didn't want to fight with me. And I believe that. And I don't think she expected me to fight back the way that I did. And it just became, we were like, you know, two bulls.
Yes. I'm just picturing how much time it must take you to do this email to Anzi and productions. I mean, with like clips and receipts, okay. That sounds like it took, I mean, I get
I'm
it.
I'm so
like
good a lawyer. At it. No,
yeah, really you're probably it. Great at it.
I'm really good at it. You know, all my training working for Peter Jennings when I was 24, like I knew how to deliver a dossier. And it, believe me, it wasn't my first to production. It was like my 10th.
Do you think that was like the final nail in the coffin, or you think
I
no,
think
it's
so.
Just you were,
yeah,
you
I
do.
I think, I don't know. No, not that. I think at that point, you know, cause I said I was being gaslit because the incident was like on the show, you'll see it on the reunion. Maybe I think they kept it in because I don't know, at one point Bethany was like, I don't have anything in common with her. She has no job, no career, no husband, no child. And I said this on the show, which it did really hurt my, you know, I have a lot of pride, you know, so maybe it didn't come across that it really hurt me that she would say something like that, because I definitely considered her up until the point. And I only heard that when I was watching it. So I learned that she said that with the rest of the world. Right. And up until the point where I was watching the show and seeing how it was unfolding and the stuff that she was saying, I still had great affection for her. So like, I was just like, oh, wow. You know, we had a rough season, but then I saw the show and I was like, whoa, wait. And what happens is the show's airing, but you're still doing those confessional interviews. So you're seeing, so you'll see, like Andy said, well, you said shit about her. And like, yeah, I did. The very last confessional interview I filmed was like 2 weeks before the reunion, but I had seen the whole season of all this terrible shit that she was saying. So I went in. So I was like, oh, okay. You know, now I'm going to say, you know, what I think.
In 10 days, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
'Tis the most wonderful time of the year, but you know what? Your mouth gives a lot of action this time of year. It's talking to all of those relatives, all that food and drink that you're putting in it, karaoke parties, or perhaps a mistletoe makeout. Listen, give your mouth the gift of better oral care with Quip. This is why I love it. It's lightweight. It has a sleek design. There's no wires or bulky charger. It also has reusable handles and a range of sleek metal hues, or as I prefer, bright plastic colors. Quip has so many stocking stuffers as well. Refillable mouthwash, refillable gum, floss. If you go to getquip.com/velvet right now, on top of their holiday savings, you'll get your first refill free. That's your first refill free and up to 40% off bundles at getquip.com/velvet. That's spelled GETQUIP.com/velvet. Quip, the good habits company. I'm in such a good mood because I just got my new rain jacket, t-shirts, and sweaters in the mail from Tentry. Not only are these products fashion forward, but they're earth friendly. Tentry sells lots of different products, including clothing, underwear, outerwear, activewear, and more. What I love is that not only are these fashion forward, like I said, but everything they make is manufactured ethically and from materials that are either sustainably sourced or recycled. Besides being sustainable, Tentry clothing is so soft and so comfortable. I'm already wearing these t-shirts like all day and all night. Listen, for every item purchased from Tentry, they plant 10 trees, and this helps take carbon out of the air, replenish ecosystems, and it gives jobs to tree planters and communities around the world. Learn more about Tentry's planting mission and to grab some comfy, sustainable clothes, check out their website, www.tentry.com. And because you're listening to this podcast, use code VELVET to get 15% off your first order. That's www.tentry.com. Use code VELVET to get 15% off your first order. The holidays can be the most wonderful time of the year. Okay, I'll leave the singing to someone else. But if you're running an online store, you do know that it also can be the craziest time of the year. I was going through this with the Behind the Velvet Rope merchandise. I had all that to manage. I had so many orders to fill, and I had a growing list of stressed out listeners checking in twice a day, wondering where everything was. Well, I found ShipStation. The hassle of shipping out holiday orders and all of this merch has just melted away. Listen, if you sell anything online, I don't need to tell you that shipping can be super frustrating. There are so many carriers and a ton of factors that go into figuring out the best rate for each order. What I love about ShipStation also is you can easily import orders from every sales channel, Amazon, eBay, Etsy, or your own website. Also, ShipStation works with all major carriers, international and local, including FedEx, USPS, and UPS. Make this holiday season a little brighter with ShipStation. Use my offer code VELVET to get a 60-day free trial. Just enough time to handle the holiday rush. Just go to ShipStation.com, click on the microphone at the top, and enter code VELVET. ShipStation. Make ship happen. Have you ever been excited by that big sign, free trial? You sign up and you don't even realize it's a subscription that renews without your consent. My life has changed since I discovered Truebill. Truebill is the new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions you don't need, want, or simply forget about. On average, people save up to $720 a year with Truebill because companies make subscriptions so hard to cancel. Have you ever actually realized you were paying for a subscription and then tried to cancel it? You have to scroll around that website so many times, click so many buttons. Truebill makes it so simple. Just link your accounts and Truebill will cancel your unwanted subscriptions in one tap. And your Truebill concierge is there when you need them to cancel unwanted subscriptions so you don't have to. Don't fall for subscription scams. Start canceling today at Truebill.com/velvetrope. Go right now. Truebill.com/velvetrope. It could save you thousands a year. Truebill.com/velvetrope. Well, I know what you guys were doing in the early 2000s. It's the same thing I was doing. Millions of households across the world turned into watch contestants battle for the last rose or to be the final survivor on an island. Reality TV at this time was beginning to dominate the airwaves, and every show needed to be bigger, flashier, and more scandalous than the last. But in the case of one infamous dating show, the real drama was happening off screen. The reality TV series, There's Something About Miriam, seemed like a pretty standard dating competition. Six young men vied for the affection of Miriam Rivera, a beautiful model from Mexico. But when Miriam revealed that she was a trans woman during the show's finale, the on-screen drama sparked an international uproar about gender, sexuality, and whether reality television had gone too far. Wondery's new podcast miniseries, Harsh Reality, the story of Miriam Rivera, reveals what happened behind the scenes on how a multi-million-dollar lawsuit and media fallout changed reality TV forever. Follow Harsh Reality, the story of Miriam Rivera on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or you can listen early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app.
But
that makes sense.
Yeah. So, anyway, but I don't know what my point was. My point was I did feel hurt about the things that she was saying, especially like I have no husband. Okay. Well, my husband passed away. We didn't have children. And that didn't like, it's not like I wouldn't have wanted children with my husband or after with anyone, but just didn't work out for me. Right. So in that way, but I brought it up at the reunion and they came down on me like and said, she never said that. She, you know, Andy was like screaming at me and then he was like, he has an IFB. You know what that is? Now
like,
they call
him, he's like listening to like the control room or whoever.
Used to be called an IFB. Professionally they're IFBs, but now they're like iPods or whatever, little AirPods. And he's talking to the control room. And not only is he saying she never said that about my husband and a child, but that he's like, the producers are telling me they're looking at the show right now in the control room. And she definitely didn't say that. Well, I know that they're not screening the show in the control room. There is no control room. That's screening the show while we're in the reunion. So I was like, what are you talking about? And he's like, yes, I've got definitive word. She never said that. And it was just nuts.
You're like, I won Emmys for producing. Like, you forget that
there's no control room where they're like screening 15 episodes of a show to find out exactly, you know, it was just nuts. And I almost thought I was going to like get up and leave, but you know, I was just going to get up and leave, like do one of those. But then I felt like self-conscious about that. Like, I felt like, that's so housewifey, Carol, like to get up and be all indignant. But I did feel indignant. I did feel outraged that I was, you know, that they were not only not, they were protecting this storyline and again, and gaslighting me. But like, but now, you know, that is another regret. I should have just stormed off. Right. And hailed a cab outside and like
that would have been very housewifey of you.
I know. But I wish I did that now.
But it sounds like you knew, like you said, at that point, they're protecting Bethany at all costs. Like,
yeah. And I totally understood the decision. I'm not going to say that. I understood. And, it was very hard season to watch and a very, very difficult reunion to sit through. It was. And I knew after the reunion that I remember calling my accountant and saying like, okay, like, if I don't do the show again, that's X amount of dollars I'm not going to get. Like, am I okay for like a year or two or three? You know, I was just, it was that style.
That's what they count on. It's like, you're miserable and you're like ready to walk out. And then they're like, well, here's the next check for the next season. And you're like, oh, okay. maybe I wasn't that miserable. I was 2 weeks ago. Yeah.
Stockholm syndrome, right? You're just like, all right, well, let's see. Like, Heather and I are really close now and we could do something. And then, you know, Ramona was always, I know she's nuts, but she was always about the show, right? So you could always do something with her that she, you know, she was doing for the show that would work, you know, that would, and she wasn't afraid to make herself look like crazy.
Yeah, I know. Ramona has delivered.
She's the workhorse of that. And certainly this past season after Heather left, she held that together, that show together, I think, more than any of the others.
You think this past season, Ramona is the one who kind of held it together?
I'm going to preface this by saying I did not watch the whole season, but I could tell just in the three or four episodes that Heather was in, that I could see, anyone who knows how to film reality and what, I could see what Ramona was doing. And I could see that she was engaging with all the women in the way that she was trying to connect all the fights and make dramas and stuff. And I don't think, you know, as an audience just watching it, they'd understand that she was doing that. And a lot of it was did not make her look good. In that way, she was really carrying that show, at least in the episodes I saw. A lot of the other stuff was just silly theatrics that are good for like an episode or a segment, but it's not like the work of building these narratives that have got to have legs across 10 episodes, not just the 7-minute segment you're in right at that point.
Is that why you think, like, because the ratings, because this is what I go back to, like, you know, the ratings were so low, and part of it was people screamed like night, you know, it's too political, BLM, uh-huh. It's too serious. But to me, it's like, well, didn't Carol, I mean, like, what's the difference? Like, you talked about these things and I'm not coming for you. I'm saying, but the ratings were fine when you were there.
The ratings were
you
great.
Talked about an election. Yeah. They were great. Okay. The ratings were great, Carol. But like, what's the difference with your, you know, I mean, there's been a lot of talk of people saying like, see, Carol knew how to do it. She talked about it, but she talks about lots of fun things too. And I'm not coming for Ebony. I personally love Ebony.
Yeah. No. I thought what she was saying on the show was so important. I just don't think that is not the vehicle for which those discussions should be taken. You know, like her calling Luann out when Luann said she was an angry Black woman. I mean, you have to literally be living on Mars to not understand that trope of the angry Black woman. I mean, it's not even like you just have to be so in your own head or your own world that you over, and this is hundreds of years. This is not just like, a post George Floyd world where, oh yeah, and the Black women are real. This is something that Black women have dealt with for a century, if not more and more. So like for Luann to step in it, I was like, that makes sense because that's who she is. But Ebony to call her out on it, I thought was really important, you know? But again, as an audience member, I'm thinking, yeah, you call her out on it and then it turns into something else, like where it's like you try to turn it into something more humorous, but it was hard. I mean, I get it. Ebony is a Black woman. She's faced, like, she can't just be funny about it all the time, right? Because this is every day, her existence.
Right.
So, when I called Luann out for wearing blackface, you know, I called her out. It was kind of very odd to see her walk in the party. And even though, again, you have Stockholm syndrome and you're in this bubble of housewives and I remember thinking, is she wearing blackface? Like what is happening right now? And not saying it at the time, because you just feel like, again, you're kind of being gaslit maybe. Wait, what? This is very, and the big afro and everyone was loving it. And they were like, oh my God, she looks so great. She looks so great. And I remember going over to what they call Video Village. I said, can I see what she looks like on camera? And I looked and I'm like, she is wearing, like, I couldn't tell, like, if it was maybe just the way in real life, what, you know, maybe I was over, I was exaggerating. I was like making, you know, because I didn't have any love lost for Luann at this point, what I'm making. But then I saw it on the video. I was like, Jesus, Lord. And then I brought it up the next day, but it was completely, easily, quickly dismissed. And I'm not a Black woman, so I couldn't stand there and preach about what it really was about and why that's not okay, and the history of blackface. Like I'm like a white, skinny white chick. Like I'm not gonna preach that. But I think so. Yeah, thank you. Okay. Sorry, my dog just came home. That's my dog walker.
I love how you see this Luann with like the blackface and the afro, and then you actually have to question yourself of what your eyes are seeing. Like you're really? Is this what Housewives does to you? Like you're seeing something physically in front of you, and yes. You're like, am I really seeing this?
Yes. I literally had to go and look on the monitors that where the producers were. They were always like in a room, you know, right next to us filming. And then also, I will say, if anyone was sex positive on the show, like literally from season one, I would be like every Secret Santa, I was giving the ladies vibrators and talking pretty openly about sex. It's something I talk about and I feel comfortable talking about. And in that way, I talked about it with Ramona. Right. But you know, when you are just vulgar about it, like to couch sex positivity in vulgarity, it's different. It just hits differently. Like I remember a scene when we were all in Vermont and we were kind of like a little tipsy at a dinner. And it was, again, 3 hours. We're like, blah, 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 this is kind of boring. I said, let's play a game, truth or dare. And then I asked Ramona, because they always wanted us to talk about sex and all that stuff, right? So yeah. I asked Ramona if something about oral sex was that. And Ramona said very strongly, she's like, she came out and said she doesn't believe oral sex is sex. So now this is a reveal of Ramona Singer, the good Catholic girl. So like in that way, she was totally comfortable talking about it with me in a way that she wasn't aggressively lectured to about it. So we made, right. It turned into a game. And then I thought that was pretty big reveal. And she's talking about oral sex, not being sex. And I'm like, really? So how many men have you had this not sex with? And like, and it was a good conversation that we all could participate in, but sitting at a dinner and talking about, you know, anal, and I actually brought up anal sex too, in that same dinner. And then Tinsley famously said, I only had it with my husband, and which really blew my mind, because when I said truth or dare, when was the last time you, and again, I couched it in this funny, when was the last time you had anal sex? I thought for sure she was going to take the dare.
Right.
Right.
Like, of you know, all people. Yeah. Like Tins right. is not going to talk about
so
this.
So she like, she's like, I only once, with, and it was with my husband. And I thought, whoa, but you know, of course we talked about it all. Did I sit there and talk about rimming and, you know, anal this and that, and my vagina this, vagina that? No, you know, because no one really wants to hear, you know, that's like, that's just vulgar.
And it wasn't for shock value in this situation.
No, it was just, I was trying to draw them out, right? In a way that revealed something about their personality or their thinking, and not just saying something vulgar and under the umbrella of sex, you know, being positive about sex. So I don't know, maybe that's, I just did it differently. I don't know. And not to say that my way was a better way. I don't know. But I would say if you're just looking at ratings, that was a, you know, maybe that's a piece of it, you know, but it was really, it was everything. We had a really good cast for a few years there. Like we were just really jiving.
Do you think that's what it is too? Is that like to your point, these weren't real connections? You know what I mean? Like they weren't real friendships, yeah. So to speak. Yeah. Like you think that's part of it?
Yeah. Yeah. They got away with what their main core casting. I mean, it's like they sell the show to advertisers as wealthy women navigating New York social scene and friendships. And then they weren't casting necessarily like that. So, and plus again, Housewives, like they really need to be in their mid-40s to mid-50s. Ramona's even older, but like only because there's a lot of life experience that you hit between 35 and 45. You really kind of, women, I think, come into their own. And they also have spent at least a good decade in the delusion of their bubble, right? You know, their upper East bubble. And that's important, right? I'm not saying that the others wouldn't make for good reality shows in a different show. It's just the Housewives is very specific. And again, it's production's choices with casting. And, and I hear that they want to cast younger. It doesn't work. And it's classic New York to come out now and say, oh, we want to cast younger, when their best casting that they've done since, I think, Dorinda in season 7, their best casting is an older woman who everyone is in love with and should be in love with, because she's quintessential what a housewife is. And that's Kathy Hilton. So New York is looking at, right? This is all the information you have. You're like, wow, this woman is a breakout star. She's amazing on the show. And I get
amazing.
Amazing. She's not younger. So then you take that. And that's the lesson. That's what you extrapolate from that superstar casting. Oh, I really think we need to cast younger ones, when you cast younger ones and it hasn't quite worked out well. So it's just it's production. And Ebony was blaming production, and she was right.
That's a good point. I didn't really think about that with Kathy Hilton, but that is a good point.
Right. Look at the franchise. What are the recent hires that have really crushed it and the audience really identifies with? And listen, I don't know all of them. And again, I just see it on social media, but Kathy Hilton is like the best casting since, I would say, Dorinda Medley in season 7, who was fantastic when she came on board.
I would agree with both of those.
Then the lesson isn't let's cast younger. It's like, what?
It's a strange.
I am giving them so much good advice that I should be getting paid.
You should be getting paid.
I should be a consultant.
And you really think like changing the production company to like a New York base?
I mean, I think so. I've said that, time and time again. I just thought, maybe the New York LA thing doesn't come into play, but just even if it didn't, like, I just think some of the choices that this particular production company has made over the past several years, even since season 5, has just been questionable. And it's like, give another production company a shot. Like, maybe, and in a way to recast the whole show. I'm not saying, it's terrible, because these women, it's their livelihood, and especially the 3 veterans have done this, and they built that franchise and they built that brand on their backs for 13 years. And it's, you can't just say, see ya. I mean, I was on for 6 years. Now, let me just put that in perspective. 6 years is longer than most scripted comedy dramas. Like, Seinfeld was maybe 7 or 8 years, right? So 6 years on a show, that's a long time, and that's a lot of content, and that's not just to be like, okay, goodbye, right? And that was 6 years, which they did to me. But 13 years is almost unheard of, except out of soap operas.
But if they're done with them, I mean, there's not going to be any consolation prize.
Well, I don't know. There should be some, severance. At least a watch. I remember saying, I'm like, am I going to get a watch? Am I going to get something? It's like,
I hope like a Rolex or at least.
Like something. I would even take a entry level Cartier, a 3,000. Okay.
Well, that's very nice of you, Carol.
I never got it. I didn't even get flowers. No, but I'm saying, I don't like to say I know Heather said like recast it, and she's right, you are talking about people's livelihoods, as it was mine for that time. Right. So I would say, I would say maybe a new production company, the new production company might serve Bravo better in the New York City area.
But it's your point before, it sounds like you think Ramona is like a quintessential, like she's a star according to you. I'm not saying she's not.
I like her. And maybe I'll get hate for the people. I know people don't like her, and she's very polarizing, but in the same way, so is Bethany. So, they are, that's what you need on the show. But, listen, it's not 2011 anymore. When I first got on the show, when you have a show built on female betrayal, these narratives that are steeped in patriarchal tropes, does that last? I mean, in 2021, does that last post Me Too? Does that last? Like, that's what the shows are, you know, you're counting on female betrayal and, you know, these kind of shaming narratives, not to mention then the criminal element is just like the icing on the cake. This is the cherry.
Well, to that point, like, do you think maybe, you know, like ratings are pretty much down, not for Beverly Hills because of this whole Erica thing.
And
Kathy Hilton and Potomac is up a little, but like, do you think there's maybe just a different world to your point that maybe this is like the everything ends, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. I think everything comes to its logical conclusion. And, you know, it's if we learn one thing during the pandemic is like the need to pivot, right? And if you're not going to pivot, you know, you're eventually going to, you know, become the dinosaur. And it'll always be a cultural phenomenon. And when they started in 2007, do you know, it started at a month later, Twitter was launched. That's how long ago it was. Like, think about Twitter. There's no Instagram. Facebook was around, but no one was using it. So, you know, it's like I said, hats off to Bravo. They created a really powerful brand and they align themselves with the issues and narratives that maybe don't play as well in 2021.
I don't necessarily.
It's funny, right? Like I was just talking and, you know, as I said, I could talk. When you're laughing and doing an interview is quite different as it's going to happen with this podcast. When you see it in black and white on the page, it kind of lands differently. So I'm sure there's going to be a bunch of stuff that is not going to, that's going to make me sound like, you know, I'm shading the women or whatever language they use. But
what was I going to say to you? Well, because you say you wanted to be part of the cultural phenomenon, which it is,
yes.
Like when people look back, when Housewives is over, because I hate to break it to everyone listening, everything in the entire world is going to end. Like, what do you think people are going to say about Housewives like 10, 20 years from now? Like, holy shit, these women are crazy. Like, what the hell was this disaster? Or like, no, it withstands the test of time.
I don't know if it stands the test of time in the way that All in the Family really stood. Like, think about All in the Family in the 70s, right? He was a racist. He was that guy. And they did that because it was scripted so brilliantly and it was satire, right? That's what it was. And he was satirizing the current climate of the culture at the time. So I think like a show like that does land differently. I don't know if Housewives is going to have the same appreciation 20 years from now. We're going to look back. I mean, I hope it does because I was part of it, you know, and there's a part of me that, you know, I have an ego too. And I'm like, well, I'd like it to be thought of as this great cultural moment where we were doing something that was reflecting what was going on in our culture. But I don't know. I think now, like I said, it feels different, you know, and maybe they'll pivot and maybe it won't be. I think if you look at the Kathy Hilton experience and you see how she said what she talks about and how she confronts the other women, there's just a different quality. I think they need to get back to that. They need to get back to, you know, talking about oral sex with Ramona in a way that she doesn't feel threatened or shamed, right?
Yeah.
That like underlying like wink, wink, we're in on the joke.
Yeah. And listen, I mean, I wasn't coming for Ramona. Like when Ramona was scurrying, like Ebony was talking about our current vice president and Ramona was scurrying. She like could not get out of it. She didn't know where to look. She couldn't get out of it. I'm like, this is the exact same thing as Bethany being under the cabinet when Carol is talking about
it. Yeah, I didn't know literally, that. Yeah. But like, Bethany could get away with it for some reason in the way Ramona didn't. But the both of them are the workhorses of the show. And it's funny because I didn't know Bethany was crawling in the cabinet. I just thought she was bending down to get something out of the cabinet. And only when I saw the show, I was like, Jesus, you know, she's like trying to make me look crazy. Like, I'm not crazy. Everyone in the country is talking about this. I was going to talk about it. But anyway, here is what he said, would you mind looking at this epitaph quote? Now, I don't know if it's my epitaph. Like, is this my epitaph? Is this going to be on my tombstone? And he says, this is what I say. The editing is the lie. The camera is the truth. But the reality is every fight you see on the show, from the silly bickering over not being invited to a party to the table flips, wine tosses, and leg throws are always about the show itself. When you were filming, if someone barely offended you, you had to rise to the level of being mortally wounded. But what you were really upset about was how the audience was going to view it and whether that drama was going to make them a star or make you look like a whatever, fill in the blank, sexist, racist, delusional person. And it really was like all the fights I felt were about whatever petty thing was going on. And listen, the pettier the better. The petty fights are the funniest, and that's what the audience loves. That's the guilty pleasure of the show, the pettiness. But when the fights would escalate to beyond the petty, to really like nastiness, it was like there was always a piece of you. And I felt for it too when during the Aviva Drescher Ghostwriter thing, like I could have just, rolled off my shoulder and was like, oh, I don't care. You sound crazy and pipe down, honey. You don't, you know, but I felt wounded by that. And I like escalated it, you know, not for the show, but in effect, it has a way of you're thinking about like, oh my God, what's the audience going to think? You always have that in the back of your mind.
But if this happened in season 5, say with Aviva, like after you learned how the machine works, would you have had the same reaction? Maybe you would have. I don't want to lead you. Or maybe you just would have been like, okay.
I don't know. I think that was, again, that fight I had with was an anomaly for me in those first three or four seasons, right? Like I was letting everything roll. There was a lot of slights. I mean, Luann was constantly saying shit about me and I was like, let it roll. But so that was like a little bit of, but again, I think it was because the couple of things, and we'll go back to the beginning, that I was felt protective over other than my late husband and his family was my work, you know, because I knew going into the show that it was so different. And I was coming from such a different experience than the other women. And I think I probably let that get the better of me in that situation. But a lot of this, most of the fights are really about the show itself.
That makes sense. Well, speaking of the work, because you say Ebony would be great on another show, like Ebony is hired to co-host The View. I don't know for how long, like as a guest.
Oh,
co-host.
Really? Oh, that's fantastic.
I don't know if it's like two or I don't know how it's working, okay. But is this true? Because I read this somewhere. I don't know if you said it, where you, after Housewives, wanted to be on The View and then they didn't want you because of Housewives. I don't know if that's you or somebody else.
No. First of all,
I mean, am I the only one that remembers this rumor? It literally was all over the place. I promise you, I'm not losing my mind from working on this podcast too long or that I'm hallucinating this, but there was this rumor that Carol wanted to be on The View after her Housewives experience ended. And The View said, you cannot be on The View. You could have been on The View, but we've seen you on Roni and it's Roni and people are falling in the bushes, drunk and sleeping with pirates and being cool and not all uncool. And we therefore cannot have you on the panel of The View because you were on Roni. Google it. That was out there. So here's Carol. I want to know, is that true? Did Carol want to go on The View? Because I really could see her as a great fit for The View. And did they say you can't come to The View because you were just on Roni? And then does she regret going on Roni, if that's even true? So we get into that in the next part, part three. This is an epic three-part, three-hour chat with Ms. Raswell. We also just break some other things down. I mean, we're just going for it. I mean, here today, we talk about, you know, if you Google Carol's name, you know, I love getting into the finances apparently. And, you know, if you Google Carol's name, it says she's worth $50 million. Google it. If you Google richest housewives ever, Carol Raswell is way towards the top of the list. So it comes up. And when it comes up, I'm like, well, are you worth $50 million? And why does it say that? Let's break that down. Yeah, I know it's not maybe the most professional question. Like you're not supposed to ask anyone their age or salary or net worth. I mean, but here's Carol and you know, why not? Because it's not about me. It's not about Carol. It's really about all of you guys. So we talk about that. We talk about what really is the difference. I mean, Carol talked about the 2016 election and we talked about politics, but it was done in a way that it didn't turn anybody off. And now all of you listeners have run screaming that you will never watch Roni again and you hated it and it was the worst season ever. So we talk about what's the difference between how it was handled this season and Carol. I mean, I have eyes, I watch, so, but you know, it's not about me again. We talk about how do we get the ratings for Roni back up? We talk about the season she was on where they also took a long break. What do we think is going to happen at the end of this break? Are they going to make cast changes? Who's probably going to go? We talk about all of that. And then we talk about the future of Housewives. Like, is this brand going to continue? And for how long? So talk about all of that. And just so, so much more. It's a Roni extravaganza. It's not the only three-part interview we've had, but it is the second only three-part interview that we have had. What can I say? I mean, I could have talked to Carol for 5 hours. So stay tuned. All of that is coming. And really, really, I want to know what she has to say about The View, because I remember it was all over that Carol Raswell cannot get hired at The View because she was on Real Housewives of New York. So that question is going to be answered in part three. Stay tuned, coming kind of very soon. Thanks for listening to yet another episode of Behind the Velvet Rope, because without you listeners, I would just be a crazy person with voices in my head. And if you like what you hear, subscribe on Apple Podcasts under Behind the Velvet Rope. And when you're done subscribing, feel free to leave a 5-star write-up review, because the write-up reviews actually count. We read each and every one of them. We post the best ones, and the reviews really help our shows keep going. And we really appreciate everything you guys say, especially the positive ones. And if you want to find us online, we're at Behind Velvet Rope on Instagram. We are at David Yontef on Instagram. We're Behind the Velvet Rope on Apple Podcasts. Or head on over to Patreon, because you know what? There are just some things we can't talk about here. So for our bonus episodes, go to Patreon and type in Behind the Velvet Rope. And if you still aren't sick of me and you want more David, go to Cameo and book me on Cameo. And you can ask me anything there. I'll answer whatever you want. And I have a bargain basement price of $10. Thank you guys. See you soon.